You're listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on bingemedia.net. And now, the Binge Aftertaste.
One of the most notorious slashers in history.
Why, hello, podcast listeners. It's your friends till the end, Binge Media, bringing you another Binge Movie Aftertaste retrospective.
Play with this.
This time, Garrett brings his old friend Matthew Goudreau over from theyoungfolks.com here to the airwaves in order to discuss all eight films of the Child's Play franchise.
Trust me, you're gonna love it.
The boys will talk about each film in depth to her podcast, leading up to a review of the brand new entry, Cult of Chucky, which is now available on DVD, Blu-ray, and on Netflix.
I would rather take my chances as a supernaturally possessed doll. It's less complicated.
So be sure to listen to each of these four shows as Garrett and Matt both prove how you just can't keep a good guy, or even these two knuckleheads, down for long.
I can't think of a thing to say. Fuck it.
All coming up, courtesy of Binge Media.
It's showtime!
Eat Up Chucky, released November 12, 2004. Budget was $12 million. Box office was $24.8 million, and is directed by Don Mancini. All right, Matt, so we've gone through four of these movies. This is our fifth foray into the Child's Play series. We started off with horror. What the fuck did we just watch?
Well, let's start by, let me ask you this question, because you saw all these in a theater, right? Post two?
Two and three I saw in theaters. That was the only, those were the only two. I didn't see this one.
Okay. Theaters. What's so funny is that I remember the trailer, the teaser for this movie coming out when I was probably 10 or 11. I saw Spider-Man 2, and they put the teaser in front of that movie with, you see the baby in like an ultrasound, and then it cuts, and the doll, the baby's head turns, and you see it's Chucky. I thought that was a pretty ballsy teaser to put in front of a comic book movie, because you're selling a quote-unquote horror movie. But that trailer teaser gives no indication as to what this movie actually was.
What is this movie? You know, when this thing was released, my fandom, I guess you can say, for the Child's Play series, it wasn't exactly at its peak. This was coming out 6 years after Bride. I had completely forgotten about the ending teaser of that film, which, as we mentioned last podcast, was actually a pretty good film. It was a fun film. So I had completely forgotten that she had given birth. I've completely forgotten. And then I go to a theater, and I don't think I saw that one. I saw the one where he runs Britney Spears off the road.
Oh, God.
And I was just, I'm watching this, and Matthew, I said the exact same thing. I looked at somebody, the person I was with, I was like, oh my God, what the fuck is this? What has the series done?
Well, even by 2004, we talked about how in 1998, when Bride came out, it was coming off the success of Scream, which really reinvented the meta comedy aspects of horror. And you look at 2004, we were way past that. We were into, you had like two big trends. You had J horror American adaptations with like The Ring and The Grudge. And then you had a slew of the remakes really started hitting, because this came out the same year as the remake of Dawn of the Dead. It came out post The Ring and The Grudge. So horror was in a totally different place. People were not making a whole lot of comedic or darkly comedic horror films. And when you did, you got something. Ironically, this came out the same year as Shaun of the Dead, which poked fun at a whole trope of zombie cliches. But Killer Dolls had gone by the wayside, just like meta comedy. I mean, can you think of any comedic horror films that were released around this time?
The scary movies were still going crazy. We were getting one of those every couple of years. That's about it, though, that I can think of.
Yeah, so you have to wonder, if you're Don Mancini, what gives you the motivation to actually make this movie? Because you look at a couple years beforehand, Scream 3 had come out. And if you look at the plots of both of those movies, they kind of follow similar main storylines. And also, they kind of have some of the same problems, where it's like you've become a parody of what you sought out to make. And you're in on the joke too much.
I'm going to tell you what I think he was thinking while doing this movie. I think he obviously wasn't going for horror, obviously. I think what one of these characters goes through throughout the course of this movie, it was his drive to make it. And we'll get into that as we get further into the plot, but, and I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and that's definitely something that's not subtle.
No, absolutely not. And so I think that might have been like the drive of what got him going on the script. I didn't do too much research on this one, but I never really got that he was going for horror. He was just like, look, I have this series that, you know, is a pretty good money generator. Let me just implicate my coming out storyline into the course of this. And, you know, I'll use Chucky as the propeller of that. Yeah, when this was released, I didn't have any real interest of going to go see it. It went by the wayside. I was a huge Howard Stern listener at that time, and Jennifer Tilly was on the Stern show, and she was talking about, oh yeah, Chucky. And I'm just thinking, wow, Chucky is still out. Like, I could not believe that this was coming out. I didn't really look at Fangoria at that time. I had stopped really caring about this franchise, and it was just shocking to see that this was coming out. All right, so what do you say we delve into the depthness that is Seed of Chucky, shall we?
Yeah, let's dive right in with the opening credits.
Yeah, opening credits, we see a birth. Literal cum fills the screen. Or this isn't a porno.
It's the Goosebumps intro to the TV show. It's just semen instead.
Oh, right away, what the fuck is happening? We have Billy Boyd, who at that point was coming off of Lord of the Rings. He's doing the voice of Glenn. Mancini in the director's chair for the first time. And a Made in Japan close-up on his wrist in the womb, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on?
I guess they had those child labor workers working up her badge.
Right away, man. Opening credits. Not even 2 minutes in, I'm already yelling what the fuck at the screen.
Yeah. Once again, though, Jennifer Tilly gets top billing.
Top billing, absolutely. I'm going to say a lot of bad things about this movie, but I'm not going to say too much bad about the opening. I like the opening. This girl, she opens a gift. We see from the doll's point of view, a British girl saying how ugly it is. And then, like, this is, like, pretty much a Halloween reference, right? As we're seeing the doll's point of view of stalking this family.
Yeah, you got Halloween. You also got Psycho with the shower. And the
Psycho with the shower. You have the Omen with the falling off the stairs, following down to the bottom of the stairs. There's Mancini putting all those horror references in relatively subtly. I mean, if you know those movies, you obviously pick up on it. If you don't, then it's not right in your face.
It's much more referential than putting like the Freddy Krueger glove in Bride of Chucky.
Positively. These are the types of references I can actually go with. Guy gets stabbed in the chest while lecturing the girl and not one scream, which I found very odd.
Did the fact that they're British kind of tip you off as to something wasn't quite right?
Yeah, you know, I didn't think about it at the time. I don't have that in my notes, but yeah, absolutely. It's definitely there.
Because I went back and watched it, and I haven't seen this movie in a long time, and I was like, okay, the acting is really stilted. They are British, so I was wondering, I couldn't remember what the cold open of the movie was, and, well, it's not the only cold open of the movie, because literally the following scene takes place in frickin' Christmas.
Yeah, we'll get there in a little bit. But I want to say one more thing about this scene. Again, I'm not saying anything bad about this. I like how this doll is just staring at its victims. Like, it's not sure what it's doing. I think this is actually a really cool way to start your killer doll movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's you're definitely feeling like there's something else there. Now, in the very next scene, we, as you say, it gets ridiculous. But here, I'm actually liking the horror implications of what this is doing.
Yeah, and I like how the doll doesn't talk at all.
And the little girl, instead of, like, yelling about her dad falling down the stairs, she's yelling at him because he's pissing his pants. The doll's pissing its pants. And then this is when the doll wakes up and we see it at a carnival. Huh?
Not just a carnival, a fucking ventriloquist convention, which I did not even realize was a thing.
I didn't either. Another thing I hate about movies, not just horror films, but any film, if you have pointless voiceover, it drives me nuts. We get voiceover from this doll. All of this is pretty bad, except I do like that he thinks he's from Japan. I find that really funny. That's a nice little joke. But other than that, man, I don't like voiceover. And when you have voiceover from a doll, what the fuck?
Yeah, and you have voiceover to a character that you don't know anything about that you're just being introduced to.
Well, Matt, we're in November, so obviously we're in the midst of Christmas season, about ready to come up. So why not get a Christmas movie? I didn't know I was putting on a Christmas movie when I put this on. But we hear Christmas music, and we see a Santa Claus getting broken up with. And it is getting attacked by Chucky in a scene I actually liked until we see yet another fake out.
Yeah, it's a two in a row.
Look, if you do one of these fake outs, you're pushing it. When you do two, seriously, Mancini, shut the fuck up. This is just, it's insulting when you have like these fake outs like this. I understand what he's going for, but still, like it's just like any movie. I don't like any movie where we're in a dream and we don't realize it till the person wakes up. Those things just never work for me. Like, episodes of The Sopranos did that, and those are, like, the least successful episodes to me. This is hideous. This is just terrible, terrible. You're fucking with your audience, and I don't like that.
Yeah, you're abusing your audience and their expectations.
Yeah, and by the way, once we're taken to this failed makeup effect, I'm being taken right back to A New Nightmare.
Oh, God.
To Wes Craven's New Nightmare, and that is not a good place to be.
No, it's not. And also Scream 3.
Yeah, Scream 3. Oh, yeah, we're going to get to the mega meta shit here in a little bit, but these are not good things to be thinking of as you're watching this.
I will say this, though, about Don Mancini. Unlike what I felt with New Nightmare, I never felt like this was a movie that was made out of spite. I got the sense that Mancini did want to try something different, and it wasn't him saying, this has gone far from what I started, like I felt with what Wes Craven did, where he just came off as bitter over what had happened to his franchise. This, I just think it's a misfire as far as approach and as far as style. But I do think we'll talk about what we alluded to earlier in a little bit.
We see Jennifer Tilly playing Jennifer Tilly. She's talking about sticking to her diet and how she should have been Aaron Brockovich. Again, while I was really praising the self-referential humor of last week's film, here is just, it gets real annoying real fast. I hate meta self-referential shit like this. Can't stand it.
And even more so than Bride of Chucky, which is, this is weird to say considering there's a 6-year gap. This movie felt even more dated going back and watching it.
It did. It really did.
Like even Julia Roberts, she's not the star that she was 15 years ago.
Yeah, she won her Oscar 4 years before this movie was released. So, you're right. Like, she was doing Ocean's movies at that time.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the tail end of whatever she was doing. I mean, I don't know what she's doing now. Kind of just picking and choosing her projects now. But then, yeah, she wasn't even a star then. So, that's what I don't like about these references, is you are completely dating your film. There's not even a laugh in that moment. It's just there to be there.
It's so tough because you look at Bride of Chucky and you look at a lot of the only jokes that really don't hold up are the Martha Stewart jokes. But again, Chucky's follow up to those are funny. Here, they're just references. There's no punchline. The closest you get to a punchline is where she says, oh, I could have done it without the Wonder Bra. Even though, does she even wear a Wonder Bra in Aaron Brockovich?
Yeah, that was a big thing at that time. That was a big, big thing about that movie was she, I don't want to say sexed herself up, but it was a different role for her. And that's what everybody was really praising, was she did such a good job portraying this character who was a balls out, just did what she needed to do for the sake of her town. And she did it while wearing sexy clothes and a push-up bra. So, yes, that was a big thing at that time. Tilly says she wants a meeting with Redman, and it is while watching TV that the young doll knows who his daddy is. So the doll didn't know who his daddy was, and now it does. And then the plot gets going, right?
Well,
right, Matt?
Well, you mentioned Redman, and that touches on one of my biggest issues with this movie. You would think after the award-winning turns by Ice-T and Leprechaun in the Hood and Busta Rhymes and Halloween Resurrection, you would learn not to put rappers in your fucking horror movies. But, God, and they didn't even pick a super popular rapper. It's not like they picked, you know, Snoop Dogg or Dr. Dre. You're picking, like, a C-list rapper to be a director, not much less than just playing himself. He's a director in the movie, which is probably more implausible than the whole killer doll aspect.
Any of those names you had mentioned before would have been better than who we end up getting. I don't know if Mancini just had to go low rent. You know, I don't know if the studio was pushing, this guy has a new album coming out. You got to put him in it, and he had to find a way to do it. But you're right. He doesn't fit in this role. I can't name one of his songs, so I don't know if he's, you know, how popular he was at that time anyway. So why use this as your powerful? You had John fucking Waters, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
Why not put him in this role?
And he is one of the saving graces of this movie.
I wouldn't necessarily say that, but we'll get there.
Right. Well, I love John Waters.
The doll escapes using some very shitty running effects. And we get an Indiana Jones-like trek across the globe. God, I hate when they fucking do this.
Oh, with the map? Oh, my God. We need to put a moratorium on that.
Absolutely, dude. They did it in Indiana Jones. We're done with it. And when you have a doll doing it, I understand that Mancini's going for ridiculousness, but this was a series that was kind of, it had the ridiculousness, but it also had some fun to it. I'm not having any fun watching this. And at this point, I already know it's a straight comedy, so why am I even here?
And even before that, there's two things. The fact that the ventriloquist can't catch him while he's running, and he gets bit by a rat early on, and he falls right over.
Uh-huh.
All the attempts at slapstick in this movie fall flat completely. If you're going to do slapstick in your horror movies, you have to fully commit to it. You look at something like Evil Dead 2, where it's, you know, the gorier it is, the funnier it is. But here, all the physical comedy, when it's here, it just doesn't work. It's so absurd that you can't even laugh at it. I rolled my eyes a lot throughout this movie to the point where I thought they were lodged in the back of my skull.
We see the meeting between Tilly and Redman, and Redman just cannot stop staring at her chest. While I do like that, you know, Tilly has a sense of humor about this, seeing actors and rappers act as themselves, in this situation at least, where he says he's going to hire Julia Roberts instead, is kind of creepy. And this casting couch shit, it's even more creepy given the recent Weinstein shit that's been coming out. Like, all of this, it just has a more tinge of creepy to it, you know? Maybe not how he was going for.
Yeah, the only funny line in that scene is when Redman says, Mel Gibson's not the only director who can make a Christ movie or something like that. I thought that was pretty funny, but more so, I thought the line was funny, not how he delivered it.
So Glenn gets out of the box to some makeup effects, stage blood, and his parents. And he somehow puts together the words on the amulet will wake his parents up. What? How did he put that together?
It's literally voodoo for dummies.
It's goddamn voodoo. Yeah.
At least we do get Chucky and Tiffany early on. They don't make you wait too long.
Chucky wakes up and Dourif is here to finally bring some life into this story. As he's making fun of the kid's parents who turn out to be them. This shit is fucking hilarious.
I was with it until he faints. I thought that was a step too far.
Yeah, I agree. They obviously, Mancini's pushing it. And that's going to be my review, is that he pushes it way, way too much, even when it does work. But just leading to it and just him saying, who are this kid's parents? They must be real assholes. Like, all of this is, I laugh pretty hard at it.
Yeah, and if you listen to Jennifer Tilly's voice as Tiffany, it's a little bit gruffer because she's playing herself too. So I like how she does tweak it a little bit, because if you listen to Bride, it's her natural speaking voice.
Uh-huh. You're right about that. Absolutely.
I like that when he goes, what's your name, shit face, he just bursts out laughing.
They go into Barbie mode as the effects supervisor comes into the room to take them apart. And I do kind of like this death and the irony of the effects guy getting killed by his own creations. But the terrible effect of the head flying up and the awful bleeding from his neck is just way too much.
I just hate how... one of my problems with this movie is that the kills feel really out of place for a Child's Play movie.
Uh-huh.
I mean, compared to the movies we talked about already, they're not particularly gory and they're not particularly stagey with how they kill off characters. Sometimes, usually they're pretty anticlimactic or it's just they get stabbed and fall over. Here, it's you got a guy being beheaded and the head flies up into the air. It's just, again, like you were saying with Mancini's humor, it's too much. Even for a comedy, it's too much.
Chucky and Tiffany argue over if their child's a boy or a girl. Glenn or Glenda. Really?
Ugh, that's as funny as a urinary infection.
It's really bad, and this is what I was talking about when it came to, I think this is why Mancini wanted to do this movie. And look, I understand you're a gay man in Hollywood. It can't be that easy. I understand what you're going for with this, but here's the thing. Why use your horror franchise as that? Why not put that into another script? Why are you putting this into a horror franchise? I can't understand it. I don't understand why you would do this.
Yeah, it's way too much. It feels really out of place. And the problem is that Glenn disappears for a good chunk of the movie. He's in and out. He's really not the protagonist. Tiffany and Jennifer Tilly are the main characters.
And it is too much also when they pull down his pants and there's nothing there.
Jennifer Tilly discovers the body, and I like John Waters as a scumbag reporter, but it's yet another joke. Again, it's just too fucking far, dude.
I don't know. In the age of TMZ, that's not too far off.
Why not just put Redman in this role and put Waters as the director?
Especially for a movie about the Virgin Mary, that like screams John Waters.
It does, and maybe he only had Waters for like a few days, you know, but... And maybe that's the way he had it, and he had to change it last minute. But I'm just watching this, and I'm just like, you're misusing your actors, you know, if Redman even counts as an actor.
No, he's a prop.
Glenn is asking what they did in Japan, and they make the plan to inject their bodies into Jennifer Tilly and Redman.
Oh, look, it's a dead horse, everybody. Beat it. This is, what, the fifth time they've done this in the series?
And Tilly is having a rendezvous with her limo driver as her manager goes through. Is her manager or her assistant? I'm guessing assistant.
Yeah, maybe. It's got to be her assistant because you wouldn't treat your manager like that.
Well, I don't know if he was going for like, you know, oh, I'm a major actress. I don't need to listen to you. But yeah, you're right. It's an assistant. You get all that? Like, she's just a complete fucking slut.
Tiffany does have one really funny line in Chucky's follow-up. She goes, my mom always used to say I had one kid. Once is a blessing, twice is a curse. And Chucky goes, well, that would explain your sister.
I did like that line, too. You know, all this Glenn or Glenda stuff, again, way too on the nose. We've discussed this. But if there's one thing I do like, and it comes from the beginning of this movie. I like how he asks why they kill. Why do you kill?
Do you like their responses, though?
No, absolutely not. I like that he's at least bringing it up.
Yeah, that's true.
Tilly says she'll end up on Celebrity Fear Factor with Anna Nicole Smith as she fires her assistant and Redman shows up. Again, way dated reference. Jesus Christ.
They're both very dated.
We see doll titties as Chucky gets ready to fluff his pillow to Fangoria.
That was the equivalent. And that scene was the equivalent of Duck Tits and Howard the Duck.
That's the very first thing I thought of as well.
I'm like, oh, checklist of things I never needed to see or wanted to see, check.
God, this scene is just goofy and stupid. Boy, do I hate it.
Well, it's like you were notorious on our last show for not liking the doll sex, and this just pushes that to 11.
I hate the Tilly Redman scenes as he's asking about Bound and they're making out. All of this just isn't funny. And again, John Waters playing a journalist, taking pictures of Chucky, whacking off. What the fuck is going on?
Well, also, the Bound reference, this is not exactly the audience for this movie is not exactly people who would go and see Bound.
Well, it kind of is, if you think about it, because it does have some lesbian action in it. I kind of get that in this context, but we're not going indie with this, if that's what you're asking. We're not going like full indie film. It's relative to the context of this film, I think it works.
Well, what I mean is that you look at all the references in this movie, it's so scattershot to the point where you're like, who is this movie for? You have references to Julia Roberts. You have references to, you have Redman in the movie. You have John Waters in the movie. You have references to other horror movies that get more and more obnoxious as the movie goes on. You have a certain cameo that just irritates the hell out of me because I lived through her heyday. It's just, I don't know who the audience is for this movie. And you could argue Bride, that's a complete departure from the previous sequels. But you look at it, it wasn't too far off from the absurdity that, you know, Child's Play 2 and 3 capitalized on. And Bride of Chucky was not a full-on comedy like this is.
Absolutely. This is slapstick. You're right. It's full comedy. Chucky knocks Britney Spears off the road, proclaiming that he did it again, while John Waters just gets a terrible burn off sulfuric acid death. This is a pretty brutal death, to put it in your comedy.
Well, John Waters heard that Christopher Nolan was making a Batman movie and he wanted to be Two-Face.
Maybe. The Two-Face makeup was a hell of a lot better than the makeup and computer graphic effects here.
Could be worse. He could have looked like Tommy Lee Jones, where they just sprayed him with silly string.
Hey, I would go for that. Tiffany looks up recovering addicts' remedies and calls the wife of one of her victims. Again, just an odd scene in a movie full of odd scenes.
But do you like the obviously, I don't. We can argue whether or not it was done well, but the Tiffany redemption angle that they tried to play? Where do you stand on that?
Yes, I do like it. To a point, I like that she's starting to have, you know, second thoughts of what the fuck have I done with my life? Like, why have I been doing this with my life? Does it belong in a horror film? Absolutely not. We've argued the entire podcast that this isn't a horror film. The storyline itself, I'm going with. Absolutely. I do like it.
It's really the only plot that interests me, because Chucky is, he's just there to kill people. Like, he's not really the driving force of the plot like he is in the other movies. And Glenn, once after the John Waters death, he's gone for like 10 minutes.
And when he's gone, boy, do you feel his absence.
I'm so enamored with that character.
Mm-hmm, me too. Redman goes to Jennifer's for dinner and discloses that she is pregnant, while he says he had a vasectomy. And another thing, I hate listening to people eat. And this scene is nothing but Redman just gobbling up food while saying she has to be hot. This whole fucking storyline and this whole scene just sucks.
Yeah, see, you're not a fan of dinner scenes, then.
No, I don't mind dinner scenes. I just hate, like, and again, I know what Mancini's going for. He's going for the unease that comes with it. But my God, there's this whole scene of him just slobbering up this fucking plate of spaghetti, whatever the fuck it is. I'm like, dude, shut the fuck up. It's way too much. Like this movie.
He gets his intestines poured out onto the floor.
Yes. Tiffany kills Redman by cutting out his intestines right in front of Glenda, who twitches for some reason. I do like this death. Again, when this movie is going for those horror sensibilities, I do kind of like it. Like, this is a brutal fucking death. And this guy's been, you know, staring at Tilly's tits for the entire fucking movie. So, of course, Tiffany is going to go for where his dick is. I find all this just, it's very, very clever. But it's just, again, way too much. This whole Glenda stuff is what kills it for me.
It feels really out of place for the rest of the movie.
It really does. Like, another thing, like, the movie's also working for me when Chucky is having interactions with Tiffany. I like these scenes a lot. They're discussing Martha Stewart's chances of living and their competition of whether Glenn is a boy or a girl. While that storyline sucks, I do like Tilly and Durr have always had great, great chemistry when it comes to these two characters.
Yeah.
But again, when the storyline in the movie actually sucks, it doesn't work.
And she does have, in that scene with Martha Stewart, oh no, they're about to execute Martha Stewart.
Yeah, that stuff works for me. I like that stuff.
But speaking of them, one of my problems is that the fact that they killed each other in Bride is never addressed.
Yeah, like a lot about this series, it just reboots it. This movie just reboots itself. So I don't know what are those deaths in that previous film are to be taken serious. And we're going to get questions answered in the next film, kind of. I don't even know if those previous films even exist in this world. Like, it's just, you're right. They don't bring any of that shit up. Why would these two be fighting like this? Why would these two even be together if what they went through in that last film even happened?
Right.
So Chucky ties Jennifer up and somehow having a gay director is fine with exploiting the tits of his star. I mean, Chucky's like reaching up for her chest, and it's, I don't know, maybe when I was like 14, 15, I would have found this like extremely hilarious, but now I'm just looking at it, I'm laughing because of how ridiculous it is.
There comes a point where I don't even know what to say about those scenes. It's just like, oh God, come off it already.
They're now discussing whether killing is a choice or addiction. Again, stuff I do like. And Tiffany calls the limo driver to entice him over. And how the hell do these dolls get him tied up?
Yeah, better question. How does a voodoo accelerated pregnancy work? Again, the Ooga Booga shit is the biggest problem with this franchise. It just, the voodoo does whatever the script needs it to do.
It's a plot point of convenience. You're absolutely right. The assistant comes in, gets burned and thrown off a staircase for her troubles. And we learn that Glenn has decided to be Glinda. We find out that he's completely out of the closet. Groan.
Yeah, and as that wasn't bad enough, Chucky literally talks about having skeletons in his closet and he knocks the bodies out of the closet. You know, yep. It's one thing to be blatant with your metaphors. It's another thing to hammer them repeatedly.
It's not only on the nose, it's on the cheeks too. Like, it's just, it's everywhere. Like, you're beating us over the fucking head with this. Stop it. Tilly has a set of twins that is a boy and a girl who are the cleanest babies ever, by the way. And Chucky has finally had enough disclosing that if being human is this complicated, he'd rather just be a doll. Which, he's got a point. Like, why go through all this shit of being human if this is what it fucking comes down to?
It's the series finally acknowledging, like, all right, I've tried this 5 times and it hasn't worked. I'm done.
A lover spat makes them break up as the limo driver gets out and killed for his troubles. And at this point, Chucky is right. This movie is just too far up its own ass and complicated for its own good. Like, seriously.
Like, I still don't. The psychosis of the Glenn and Glenda character, I still don't get it.
I don't either. So Tilly is in the doctor's office as Tiffany and Glenn hide under the bed as Chucky plows through the wall and can't think of a thing to say. Groan.
That shit.
Dude, how many times have we seen The Shining fucking be referenced? And this is stupid.
That joke's been milked so much. If it was a cow, its tits would have fallen off.
Chucky kills Tiffany mid-chant and his son attacks his dad through karate because he was made in Japan.
Well, you missed it. Underneath where it says "Me in Japan," there's a port where he gets transported into the Matrix.
Oh, okay. I gotta rewatch. No, I'm not gonna rewatch.
Because they reference a Wachowski movie quite a bit.
I hate the whole last leg of this movie, as Chucky is now sliced apart, as is the life of this movie. 5 years later, Tilly's told her daughter is a nightmare, and she's carrying Tiffany around and does the doll's bidding as her eyes turn yellow, and we get a full final monologue about not being ashamed of who you are.
And also, why wasn't her eyes glowing yellow the closing of the movie? We didn't need that whole extended ending of the movie.
Again, like the entire movie, Matt, how many times we have to say it? It's been drawn out. You know, it's just going to be fucking repeatedly done. It's going to be repeatedly beat over our head that This is what she's turned into. We get a full final monologue about not being ashamed of who you are, and Glenn gets his dad's arm in the mail as credits roll. All right, Matthew, that is Seed of Chucky. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give this film, sir?
It's one of those movies where I've seen it a couple of times, and every time I have to sit down and watch it, I find less and less enjoyment out of it. Even on a schlock level, the problem with the movie is, as a horror movie, it somewhat nails when it tries to play those scenes straight. But as a comedy, it's way too far up its own ass. It's in on the joke too much. I compare this movie to, you know, that scene in Scream 3 with Carrie Fisher that goes on for way too long?
Yep.
That's this movie if it was 80 minutes. Fortunately, the movie's only 80 minutes, like, on the dot. It's not so ponderous that it drags on too long, but... Man, I don't find much enjoyment out of it. Up to this point, it's the nadir of the franchise for me. But that said, Tilly and Dourif, they get some good stuff here and there. And I do like those horror scenes, but I would give it probably 3 out of 10.
That's going to be right about my score, too. This movie, I can go with ridiculousness. I can really go with ridiculousness. I've been criticized on the show many times for giving really bad movies high scores because I'm having fun with the ridiculousness of them. Watching this movie, not only is it ridiculous, it's flat out obnoxious. It's the worst kind of movie for me. It's just like the Hollywood referencing, I can never really go with any of that. Yeah, this is a 3 on 10 for me too. It's just, it's not even, the kills are decent. I had a decent time with the kills. I had a decent time with a lot of the interactions between Chucky and Tiffany. I think those scenes work. But this movie's a fucking mess, and I'll probably never revisit it again.
Yeah, now that I've seen it for this retrospective, I don't feel like I ever have to watch it again. If I ever do get the box set when they're done with this franchise, it'll probably just sit on the shelf for me.
All right, sir, what do you say we go grab some more stuff to drink, go use the restroom, maybe go get a doll pregnant, come back, and we'll discuss the reboot of the franchise?
I Curse guess of Chuck. One of the reboots.
Yeah, one of many reboots. All right, what do you say we take a little break and we come right back?
Why not?
Who's it from?
It doesn't say.
We found him.
Chucky's my friend till the end.
Hey, wanna play?
Can't we sleep in with you tonight?
It's only a storm. Good night, baby. Sweet dreams.
Don't forget Chucky.
It's a doll. What's the worst that can happen, huh?
It's time to play.
Curse of Chucky, released September 24th, 2013. Budget on this was $5 million, box office $3.4 million, and is directed by Don Mancini. All right, Matt, I believe Mancini had listened to people like us who are assholes just rambling on about how ridiculous Sita Chucky was and the Tiffany storyline and all this, and he decided to reboot the movie with Curse of Chucky, a movie that he said he was going to go for scares for his fans. What were you thinking as you were getting ready to watch Curse of Chucky for the very first time?
Well, the first thing was, wow, Don sure took a sweet, sweet time with making this movie, because we're talking 9 years since Sita Chucky.
Dude, it's almost like the Before franchise of the horror world, isn't it? Like, he comes out with a movie every 6, 7, 8, 9 years. This after being propelled by the studio to just completely follow up two. Oh, two's getting good advanced buzz. Like, you got to make a three. Here, you're right. He took a sweet old time.
But as far as my initial viewing, I had very tampered expectations because, as we talked about, I don't like Seed at all. And when I heard him say, I'm making this for the fans, that's always a problem for me. Because to me, when a director says that, it comes across as pandering. And fandom, for all the positives it brings as film fans, it does bring a lot of negativity in that people sometimes, and I'm certainly guilty of this, I know you might say this too, we can be very self-centered when it comes to what we want for our entertainment, and it differs from person to person. So when I heard him say that, I felt a little bit of trepidation. Then when I heard him say I'm playing this for scares, I got even more worried because I'm like, okay, this franchise has never tried to be fully scary. And when it does, like in the first one, it kind of comes off as miscalculated. And in Seed, it's not even the movie. It's snippets that distract from the utter shit we were watching beforehand. So I had a lot of reservations going into this movie.
Same here. I mean, isn't that pretty much the definition of fan service? Is I'm making this for the fans. I mean, that's where that phrase comes from, you know, and that's never really a good thing. You got to make something from your heart. You got to make something for you. And maybe he tried that with Seed, now that I'm thinking about it. Like, he had to get that out somehow, some way, and that was the only way he could really think of how to do it. You know, what it's like being a gay man in Hollywood or whatnot. I will say this. When this was coming out, I was at least intrigued because I'm trying to think of the last time a series was rebooted by its own creator. You can make an argument that Bride was that for this series. You can make an argument New Nightmare was that. Kind of.
You could kind of argue Prometheus and Alien.
Kind of. But I'm looking at this, and I can't really think of too many ways that's been the case where the creator has rebooted it. That kind of intrigued me. Also, we're looking at this as a direct-to-DVD, and we're just thinking, oh, man, you know, it's gone to the shitter because it's going direct-to-DVD and video on demand, and nobody wants to see it in theaters anymore. I look at that, believe it or not, I look at that as a positive, because around this time, we were getting a lot of movies like this where it was coming out on, they were going straight to DVD, and they were actually fun romps. I was looking forward to that. It's almost like it was something I could have just discovered at Redbox one day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, or you're stumbling through Netflix or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I was looking at this with a very, very open mind. That being said, this is only my second time watching it since 2013. This is only my second time watching the film. Maybe that says a lot about what I initially thought of it.
Well, the reason I'm like you, I've only seen it twice. This and Seed, I watched back to back.
Oof.
And I had forgotten how much I didn't remember about it. It was almost like watching it for the first time because I saw it when it first came out, kind of on a whim.
Uh-huh.
And then I never went back to it. Part of it's just with, you know, what I'm passionate about, I try to watch as much stuff as I can. And when you have that mindset, you don't really want to go back to stuff all that often because you only have so much time to work with. And nowadays, horror, you really have to dig deep to find the gems. Although there's been some good mainstream stuff certainly over the last few years, but I'm sort of worried that even 4 years ago to now, you look at horror, the big hits, it's kind of setting a dangerous precedent for upping on nostalgia or the 80s. And no, but seriously, Child's Play, this Curse of Chucky hits both of those concerns, rebooting something from the 80s, and I don't remember what the second thing I said was, but it checks both of those boxes, so it kind of has two strikes against it already in my book. And I know you've made that point several times. That's one of the things we do agree on when it comes to speaking of fan service, is you and I kind of have similar stances on what has happened to Star Wars recently.
Uh-huh.
Where you have a bunch of think tanks come in and say, all right, how do we please everybody? And that's kind of what Curse of Chucky felt to me on the first viewing. It felt like you're trying to please everyone, but you're kind of coming off as self-serving by course correcting.
We're going to go ahead and get into the movie. We meet Nika, played by Brad Dourif's daughter Fiona, and a box shows up to the door.
And a very attractive UPS guy, and they start hitting on each other right away.
I like the intro here. Again, it goes without saying that there's no fucking way this box could be delivered to her by anybody other than somebody else wrapping it. That's always been a problem with these kinds of storylines that Mancini seems to inject into every single one of these movies. But you're right. It's a great introduction to this character.
Yeah, and I was worried going into it. Nepotism much? Having your daughter your main star playing the main lead in the movie? But I do have to say it works out pretty well. I think she's pretty good.
I think she's really good. You know, she's not unattractive, but she's not a sex pot. She's pretty enough. We're going to find out she's a pretty good actress. She's having to play herself being in a wheelchair, which is never easy. She does that very well. The nepotism was definitely in the air, again, on my initial viewing as well. But she pulls this role off. And just to preview my thoughts, none of the complaints I have anything to do with her.
No, not at all. I think she's the best part of the movie for me. And one thing I do have to give this movie credit for is that the main character's disabled, and it's not beating you over the head with the fact that she's disabled. It plays into the movie and how she's treated, but I have to give them I have a lot of respect for Mancini for taking that approach.
So the box is opened, and here we see the new design of Chucky, And it's a design I actually really like. It brings back the innocence originally associated with the character. And that's something I can always go with.
And I do like how it foreshadows something we find out later where it looks even more plastique in comparison to the original dolls. Like, you look at it, you're like, it's definitely a good guy doll, but something's not quite right. It looks a little too polished and a little too artificial. But I find that more unsettling. Like, I find this doll actually legitimately creepy. The fact the smile's much more pronounced.
Oh, yes, yes. The mouth is open on the smile. Like, you're right. It's completely just in your face almost. But that's what makes it even more creepy for me, too.
We also meet her mom.
Yep, we meet her mom who throws the doll away. And they are aching to bring mood in here, right? We see close-ups of the house with creepy, overblown music. Mancini's doing his damnedest, right, to bring this mood up. It's a mood I can definitely go with more than the last one. I'll get that much.
Well, it sticks to it at least.
Blood moves across the floor, and I do like that he is playing with conventions, as it isn't what we see, but what we don't see is what works in horror. Now he's finally getting it. Almost 3 decades after he fucking comes up with the series concept, now he finally fucking gets it.
I do like what he does with the, you see the reflection in the blood puddle?
Oh, yes.
I think that's a great shot. And one thing I'll say about Mancini's direction, this time around, it's more polished.
After the opening credits, Nika is in full mourning of her mother, and her sister comes to the house with a pastor, and she starts blaming herself. I'll admit, I already like this set of storytelling a hell of a lot more than a doll with an identity crisis.
Well, I have to say this movie kind of subverted my expectations. I wasn't expecting it to hook me as quickly as it did.
No problems whatsoever with the setup. Absolutely none. We meet the rest of the family who we will be spending this film with, as we see the maid, who's, by the way, hot as hell. And we meet a little girl who will be the one who connects with the doll. How are you feeling about where we are right now, Matt? Like, are you liking this more? Are you seeing potential? Are you really with the movie here? What are you feeling as we see the setup going on here?
I was pretty invested. Some of it was a little too much where she carries the doll exactly like Andy. Alice also starts with an A. I don't know if that's fully intentional or not. But I have to say that the Nika, I'm invested in her story already. I like the fact that we get the dynamic between her and her sister. The sister's a complete bitch in this movie. And I like how they don't shine away from it. They make her completely reprehensible for the most part. But we'll talk about later, that becomes a problem for me. With the exception of Nika and the little girl, I don't like any of these people.
Chucky is discovered by Alice. And we see interactions with Nika and Barb going down about assisted living. And we get commentary about how print media is dead, which, as a guy with a journalism degree, I can completely attest to. This is starting it, right? Like, where we're seeing just how big of a bitch this chick really is.
Yeah, and she's just completely condescending. I mean, she is the older sister, so she does have that kind of, like, entitlement, especially, they talk about what they want to do with the house, and financially, her and her husband are not in a good place. Actually, they're not in a good place, period, because we found like, literally and figuratively, because literally they're in a house with a haunted doll, and figuratively, like, their marriage is falling apart, and, you know, he's working at Starbucks, they say. On the one hand, I do like how they put these characters. This is really the first time in the series where we're actually getting to know the characters beyond surface detail. So that's something I do appreciate about the storytelling early on. And I do, with the little girl, when she automatically connects with the doll, I do get the sense that this girl doesn't have much of a life as far as friends and being out there. But from the first jump scare they do with her and the doll in the bathroom, I got a little worried because I'm like, oh no, it's going to be James Wan's spook house jump scare effects for the whole movie.
Nika slices tomatoes right in front of Chucky. And I will say, again, Fiona Dourif, hell of a lot better actor than Alex Vincent, at least.
Yeah.
So I'm liking her a lot more. We get an ultra-long close-up of Ragano, and at this point, I almost feel like we're watching Jon Favreau's Chef. You know something's up with this food when they're just... It is just the focal point of an entire 5-6 minutes of film, at least.
Yeah, and they had me until they said it was vegetarian chili, and I'm like, oh, fuck off. That's an abomination. I hope you all die.
This is a very weird dinner scene. Very weird dinner scene.
Do Do you like, though, how they show Chucky putting the rat poison in? On the one hand, I don't like that they show it. On the other hand, I do like how it's, you don't know who's eating it, but process of elimination, I wonder who it could be.
Exactly. To go back to your question, yeah, because Mancini knows that, you know, we're not going to assume that sister did it. So, of course, Chucky did it. And so why not show him do it? I don't mind that. And that is part of the suspense, right? Like, the only person we know is not going to really die from this is Nika, the main character, and the little girl, of course. But I do like that he's like, look, I'm not going to give you any suspense. I'm just going to give you scares here. He's doing this, and get ready for a death.
That's true. But, again, the fake outs with the husband coughing and...
Oh, yes.
That shit irritates me. Because you've already set up your suspense because you don't know who's eating it. You're going to keep teasing us with who actually ate it. It's... Stick to the visual storytelling. You don't have to have them come out and say it.
The pasture brings up that the doll looks very familiar, and we then learn that the good guys were all the rage in the 80s. And at this point, Matt, in my first viewing, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, did the first Child's Play actually happen? Or is this just a re-up of a franchise without Charles Lee Ray's presence from the last one? I mean, there are questions that linger. Of course, we get answered later on. But I'm just thinking, are they just completely rebooting this franchise? Why was it all the rage in the 80s and it's not the rage anymore? But
then they do mention the fact that there were murders and stuff. So,
yeah,
they do connect it. But I would have liked to have seen them kind of play with the idea that maybe this is a complete reboot and Charles Lee Ray is not a character in it.
Danny knows that we know something's going to happen. And again, the complete constant close-ups of food. It's just like, did Favreau take notes on this for Chef? That's all I'm thinking as I'm watching this. The pastor leaves the house, and our next cut is two cops who find the car the pastor was in. And again, Mancini just can't keep from going way over the top with this dead body reveal. Holy shit.
He loves splatter blood effects more so than Lucio Fulci did. Because like you look at Cena Chucky, there's that scene in the prop room. There's like those big 10-gallon drums of blood. I'm like, even on any set, I think that's a little much.
They go over home videos and seeing videos of her mom and dad. We also learn that her dad drowned a couple weeks before Nika was even born. So we're getting some, wow, like you said, we're getting character development. That's something that this series has not had since its beginning.
And you also learn that Tommy Wiseau was apparently a friend of the family. Because I swear to God, I did a double take when they show Charles E. Ray. I'm like, oh my God, that's Tommy Wiseau.
Chucky goes missing and the maid gets the task of looking for him. We see a bunch of dolls that aren't him, and she storms out and runs into Barb, who kisses her and says she's missed her. So this is one way that Mancini is messing with conventions, because when they show up at the house, we assume that Barb is like having an affair with the pastor. You know, I mean, they show up together. And when the pastor dies, we think the storyline's over, yet the entire time Barb is having an affair with the maid. And we get, as Chucky said in the last film, lesbos.
Yeah, two movies in a row. I mean, but one of the things about this movie is that it plays a lot more of the slasher cards, where you have like stuff that appeals to 13-year-old boys.
Uh-huh.
You know, these splatter gore effects and woman-on-woman action. It's, on the one hand, I do admire that he's playing it broad, but not in the seat of Chucky way, where it's being over the head. But on the other hand, it's like, this is so far from what you started with that first movie to where it's like, I'm not even sure if this exists in the same continuity. Granted, this series, much like a lot of franchises, has said fuck it when it comes to continuity.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. X-Men. And we should point out, I know we're going to be arguing semantics, but is she the maid or the nanny?
Maybe the nanny.
I want to say it's the nanny because she takes care of the kid.
Yeah, that's a good point. So Chucky is finally found, and we are taking on a ride up the elevator. I wonder if this is going to come into play later on in the film.
I do like, though, how that's a cool little callback to the first movie with the elevator and the apartment complex.
Yeah, same design.
That's clever, because that's a call attention to
herself, right?
Yeah.
We get another jump scare from Chucky, and Nika gets a huge lecture about not being able to take care of herself as she discovers a cut on her hand.
Yeah.
Chucky tells Alice that there is no God.
Only Zool.
I do like how this influence of the doll is kind of getting played right this time. Like, even if we know how it'll go, I like that Mancini is messing with us, making us think that maybe, just maybe, he'll go more with his original idea that we came up, that we discussed in the first podcast.
Yeah, but it helps that we know 100% this doll is possessed. And it clearly has some kind of vendetta, because he's much more methodical in this movie. And he's much more proactive. Like, he kills from the opening scene.
Jill talks to Chucky under the blanket, and he reveals Dourif's voice saying she should be scared. And to this point, I'm going to admit, I'm still with this film. I like how Dourif, it's like the Freddy reveal in A New Nightmare, which is one of the only scenes I actually like in that film, where Freddy just kind of looks up and he says, "Miss me?" Like, this is him not really being, he's not being funny at all. He's not being witty at all. He's just like, you should be fucking scared. So I'm liking this a lot.
Yeah, and that scene is really unsettling because of how that doll looks, and that's the first time we've seen it talk.
We learn that the package Chucky was sent in from was in Evidence Depository. So Nika does some Googling, and here is where we learn the sequel implications. Chucky did, in fact, exist in the 80s, as did Andy. And I'm going to ask, would they have been better off not to follow the storyline and just starting over?
I think so.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing.
Aside from that, there's not much that really contradicts the past movies, except at this point, I should say. I actually got the sense that this was a straight reboot, and that if it was going to be Charles Lee Ray, they were just not going to address the stuff that had come before. They were just going to say, he's in the doll, no explanation needed. And she doesn't even use Google, though. She uses, like, I don't know what that search engine was.
It wasn't Google?
No, it was, like, not even Bing. It's, like, one of those low-tier ones. But she has internet, but yet her cell phone doesn't have service.
You catch all the film flubs. She gets up to speed on everything the series has fed us in its entire run as Chucky sets up what I would call a weird death. I know the electrocution wasn't to be from the, you know, this is kind of left over from the first film where he wanted to do an electrocution and I don't think they had the budget or anything to do it. But this nanny's death is just odd. It's an odd death.
The problem was that if you had extended that a couple more minutes, that could have been a pretty scary scene. The problem is she gets off so quickly that you see the doll move, and the fact that, like, she's showing her breasts and blowing kisses at the sister, it's just, this is the first time where I was like, okay, you had an opportunity to make this stick to your horror roots and you pushed it too far. So this was the moment where exactly. I kind of lost me a bit.
Yeah, probably, again, you pointed it out, but the only thing that really works about this is how it is happening in webcam and how Barb can't really tell what exactly is happening. I like that as well, but you're right, Matt. He starts pushing it too far again.
And we've seen, by this point, we had a lot of found footage movies. We could argue their quality, but he could have done some really clever stuff with the camera work in that scene as far as...
Uh-huh.
You know, you look at Paranormal Activity 3, I think it is, where they put the camera on the ceiling fan and it spins around a couple times and you see something move. You could have done something like that, but the fact that you see the doll, you immediately know that the doll is there, eliminates any sort of tension on top of, you know, the lesbian inclinations.
Yep. Barb's husband implicates her in having the affair as she projects. And he reveals he has footage of her and the nanny from the camera he put in the doll earlier in the day. And at this point, I'm not scared, nor am I as annoyed as last time, but I'm slightly repulsed by just how stupid these people are. Like, this is when the movie starts losing me.
Yeah, not just stupid, they come off as just horrible people. I mean, I think it's fine to do horrible characters in horror movies if your movie is completely misanthropic. But you have one character here that is your sympathetic lead. So you can't have your cake and eat it too. You have to commit to one or the other.
I'll give Mancini this, though. By making the film's main protagonist a cripple who is the only one that knows the doll's secrets, he has made her just as handicapped, if not more so, than Andy was from the first two films. And again, with a much better actor. So here, I like that putting her in this danger makes us feel for her, because this is what makes her the same size as that doll. You know, she can't kick the fucking doll because she doesn't have use of her legs.
And he also, Mancini makes a bottle movie, where it takes place in that one house.
It's a movie of place, right? Like, we never leave this house, and I do like movies that do that.
Yeah, and it's the first time that this series had done it, where there, I do get a sense of claustrophobia, but one of the problems is it takes place over, like, what, one night?
I don't know if it's, like, one night or a series of nights.
Because it feels like it's one night, because you never see the funeral that they're supposed to go to. There's no address of a funeral. It's just the pastor leaves, he dies, and then you never see the following morning. So I got the sense it takes place over one night. What if we spent more time with this family and they get on each other's nerves and the paranoia sets in? You make it like something like Cube. I mean, it's fine here, but with the exception of Nika, I hate all these people. Even the girl gets on my nerves.
Oh, yeah. I want to get to the girl here in a little bit. We then get Barbara discovering not batteries nor a camera in the doll, but a knife. I thought that was a nice touch.
That's a cool touch, although it looked like Chucky had a hard on.
Dude, did you see the last film? Mancini's not above fucking exploiting that as well.
No, that's very true.
Barb then discovers what the new design is actually hiding, which is the scarred up Chucky that we pointed out in the last podcast that everybody's pretty much familiar with. What do you feel about this? Like, we've seen the new design, we've complimented the new design, and now we see him as his old self, so I don't know if I like that. I think I would have liked him just staying with the old design.
Well, I like the revamp they did for this movie that we talked about with the mask that he's wearing. The fact that it portrays an innocence, that was what worked to the first two films' advantage, is that it looked like something from your childhood that was perversed. Here, Chucky scarred up, it's a killer doll. There's no nostalgic danger in that way. So I wish they just kept it like that. Although he does have a great line when he first speaks, when he goes, "You have your mother's eyes and they were always too fucking close together," and he takes it all out.
I do like that. That's a precursor to him putting his knife right in her eye, and it tumbles down the stairs, as does her sister's body. Again, though, like, Nika being a cripple and Fiona Dourif being such a good actress is really helping stretch what Mancini is doing here with the suspense, you know, with this eye and the body falling down and all this. And Chucky is pursuing Nika through the house as the haunted house of bodies are discovered. And I do like that through all of this, Alice is missing.
Yes.
That's another nice touch. Ian finally wakes up. Remember this guy?
Yeah, he put on his headphones and left the movie.
He finally wakes up and carries Nika to relative safety, though we weren't counting on Chucky pulling up in Christine the car.
Yeah, where did he get that car exactly? And where did he get the keys?
I know. There's so many logistic questions I have. In a movie that was playing with conventions so well, now it's just straight gone to hell.
And in the last movie, we had to see he had to have Glenn help him drive a car.
Did he knock off Avril Lavigne on the way to this house? Like, what is going on here?
Well, there was a deleted scene where he ran Kim Kardashian off 146.
Ah, gotcha. Chucky tries killing her with asphyxiation, which, okay, that's odd.
But it's plausible. It's not like she can really go anywhere.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a different kill, and we were talking a couple podcasts ago about how many ways can you have this doll kill, you know, except with this knife. And here, that I do find that to be very creative. I'll give that. Nika grabs an axe to go after Chucky, and the search for Alice persists. And Chucky corners Nika as she witnesses a chopping of the jaw, which was a weird CGI effect.
Yeah, and before that, I do like how Ian turns on her, and he kind of puts two and two together and thinks she did the murders.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, who would believe that a doll's gone crazy? It's the first time that traversal has worked, because they haven't done that in the series where, like, what if Andy was never framed for the murders, or the mom was never framed for the murders? The company just wrote it under the bus as they were crazy, and that it was like some anomaly that happened.
She chops off his head and bandages her apparently painless leg as Chucky puts his head on behind her and pushes her out of the banister in a truly bizarrely shot scene. Mancini has a thing for these banisters, man. He's always pushing people off these banisters.
Well, I think he said The Omen is one of his favorite movies, because he's referenced it a couple times, naming the kid Damien, one of the characters, Damien Cochran or something.
We then get, all right, here we go, Matt. Here's where...
Yeah, I need to leave a trail of breadcrumbs at my desk so we can figure this out.
All right, ready? We're gonna try to dig through this shit here.
Yeah, I got my pen and paper ready. Let's go.
We then get some retcon action that is extremely weird. So let me get this straight. Mancini is tying the family portrayed in this film by showing Ray, played by, for the first time on screen since the first film, by the way, by Dourif, at a funeral for somebody he killed. Is this right? Am I getting this right?
I thought it was a funeral for the father, right?
Is it the father?
No, it can't be because they show him in the family, the movies that they're watching, they show that where he meets the family and the dad is there.
Oh, yeah.
So they show him meeting the family, and he is at actually the funeral is for the husband because that's when he hooks up with the mom.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
Like I said, this is confusing as shit.
It really is. I thought it was a different funeral for a different person. And I hate this scene. I hate the yellow color scheme in this scene. I hate the Spider-Man 3 style retcon. This is the shit hitting the fucking fan for me. Like, when you retcon this in this style for a series that is 30 years old, fuck off.
Did they de-age Brad Dourif?
I think they did. Either that or they shot it in black and white so we couldn't really see how aged he was. But they probably did some CGI to take some years off. I would assume so.
Yeah, because he doesn't look as off-putting as like when they de-aged Robert Downey Jr. in one of the Captain America movies. It wasn't like that. But you look at, because they show flashbacks to the first movie, he's definitely aged. So it doesn't really work.
Also, by doing this, you're also telling us that Glenn existed. And everything you're trying to do with this story is flush right down the fucking toilet. Put these fucking stories to bed. Start all the fuck over. Why do we need to go back to the very beginning and learn where this character came from when we didn't even know to begin with and we didn't really care?
Because that was the problem that the Nightmare on Elm Street movies ran into, where they added to Freddy's origin, where it's like, oh, he was raped by 100, his mother's was raped by 100 criminals, and The more you reveal, the less scary they become.
But we've already said, Matt, we've already said that Chucky's not scary to begin with.
No.
But we didn't need a backstory on Chucky, though. Like, it's not that it makes him less scary. It makes him less interesting.
And it turns into, like, bizarre S&M movie where he's got her tied up and...
Yep.
He's fantasizing about being the father.
Yeah, we're seeing that Charles Lee Ray actually crippled her before she was born. And it was her mother that turned him in.
Yeah, not the partner that he killed in the first movie.
Yeah, not the partner, exactly. But the mother, this is hideous to me. This is
not only that, he's responsible for her being paralyzed.
Yeah, you're retconning everything, including what's going on in this movie.
It's like not everything needs an explanation.
Not to mention, by making this repartee be between Fiona Dourif and Brad Dourif, father and daughter, it makes it even more creepy, and not in the way that Mancini intended. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is just a creepy scene no matter what.
Yeah, it's you no matter how you read it, it comes off as unsettling.
The completion anxiety line comes back into play, because we remember that from the very first scene, and it is now a cat and mouse chase type ending. A cop shows up, only to find Nico with a knife, and she is sentenced to an insane asylum. And then we get a truly bizarre ending montage that ties it up to Bride, I think.
I don't even know. The trajectory of this movie is so difficult. There's that clear demarcation line. Once Chucky pushes her onto the balcony, the movie loses me.
Mm-hmm.
And it never wins me back. Which is disappointing because I was so with it. I mean, there were some things that I had qualms with going forward. But I was like, I was pleasantly surprised. And then it's like, Don Mancini got in his own way again.
Tiffany takes the package to be delivered somewhere we'll find out about in a minute, and Jill, remember her, finds Chucky again, and he wants to play hide the soul. So after staying away from the Ooga Booga all fucking movie, here we go.
Before that, though, I do like they do the Bride of Chucky recall with the cop that she kills in the car.
That's what I was saying when I was saying they tie it into Bride. So is this between Child's Play 3 and 4?
No, it's afterwards because she's possessed Jennifer Tilly. So I assume this is after C, because she says, who's next? It's like she's done this already.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because that's why she was in the car when she stabs him.
Gotcha. Boy, you could tie yourself in knots going over these fucking plot points.
But so God, after as the soon as he says hide the soul, I was like, motherfucker, we were this close.
After the credits roll, we see another package has been delivered to Andy Barclay's house. Though this scene just made me wish acting lessons had been delivered to Alex Vincent. Oh, does he make this scene bad?
Well, I didn't even realize that was him.
It takes a little bit, huh? You got to kind of gaze at him because he's got the scruffy beard. He's got the fat face. Yeah, it takes a little bit to realize who it is, huh?
Like, I knew it was Andy Barclay, but I was like, is that the same actor? Because I thought it was Justin Whalen at first, but he would have been much older. Well, not super older.
But his acting here, but, oh, his acting. Just in this small 2-minute scene. Like, his interaction with this delivery person, and then just looking at Chucky and just saying, play this. And I'm just like, are you fucking kidding me?
It's the one of the worst examples of fan service, trying to bring things full circle. And also, what happened with Hide the Soul? Like, what happened to the girl?
Maybe we'll find out next week. I haven't seen next week's movie. I don't know what to expect with next week's movie. We'll talk about next week's movie here in a little bit. But I'm sitting here, I'm just thinking, I hope this is fucking done with. But Alex Vincent was all over Facebook promoting this movie, so I'm assuming that he's a big part of it, which scares the fuck out of me.
Well, it takes place in a mental asylum, apparently, so I'm worried it's going to be Dream Warriors. And he's Heather Langenkamp returning.
This series can only wish to get as good as Dream Warriors. On a scale of 1 to 10, sir, what do you give Curse of Chucky?
I look at this movie almost as a complete wash. I was with it for 2/3, maybe even a little bit more, and then it was doing its own thing when it did do the callbacks. I wasn't questioning whether or not it was the same continuity, but then they just completely shit the bed with the reveals about the backstory. So as far as a rating, it's kind of tough because there's a lot of stuff here that I do like. And part of it's my really lowered expectations, and I was pleasantly surprised even going back and watching it, but it's almost there. I almost want to give it a passable score, but I can't tell you how much the revelations at the end irritate me. So I'm going to give it probably 5 out of 10.
Coming back to this movie, I realized as I'm watching the first half of this movie, it's not nearly as bad as I remembered. I remember just completely rejecting this movie after the first time I watched it. It's weird, man, because I was watching it and I'm thinking, wow, this is pretty darn good. Well, why was I so angry watching it the first time? And then as the movie rolled on, as it got to its revelations, which I had completely forgotten about, by the way, I'm thinking, oh, this is why I fucking hated this movie. You are completely right. Your review is pretty much my identical review that I have written down here. Is there is so much to like here. I love the new design. I love Fiona Dourif. I really like how he is connecting with another little kid again. All of this is working for me, but this whole final leg of this movie, I don't know what it is about Mancini. He needs somebody to edit his scripts and edit the final thirds of his films, because even Bride of Chucky, which I gave a really good score to, is wrapped with problems at the end, and it's ending scenes. Like, he does not know how to end a film, and by tying this all together, it creates the worst sin I can think of, which is just an excessive form of fan service. Even with everything I liked about this, it is a 4/10 just because of what those ending implications are telling me. Stop tying it all together and make a scary movie that you intended. Don't tie it to characters just for fans. That's stupid. And so, yeah, the lack of integrity in this movie, the lack of balls of this movie just completely confounds me. And it's more disappointing than anything else. All right, sir, that is Curse of Chucky. We have now covered 6 of these movies. What are you expecting next week? What are we going to expect next week? Neither of us have seen this movie. We don't know what to expect. What are you thinking going into Cult of Chucky?
I almost have the same feelings I did when I first saw Curse originally. I'm very trepidatious. Like I said at the close, I'm worried this is going to be Dream Warriors for Dummies. And it's going to follow that template, and it's just going to be more fan service. I'm worried that Alex Vincent's going to ruin this movie. That's my biggest fear. I'm worried that they're going to crowbar Jennifer Tilly in again. I don't know where you can go from this point, especially with the girl at the end. I don't know if she's coming back. I will say I'm morbidly curious because I want to see if this is as much of a shit show as I think it's going to be. but it's not something I'm particularly loving to see. I don't have a whole lot of desire on a critical level.
Yeah, that's pretty much my feelings as well. My hope is that Mancini, I've been hoping this for three movies now, that he's learned his lesson and he get what he originally intended with that first movie out there. But with a title like Cult of Chucky, you're right. It's implying that we're going to be in this insane asylum and there are going to be inmates who side with and against. And I don't know how you can make a cult around a doll. I guess we'll find out. My expectations are relatively low as well. So I'm hoping for the best. We'll see when we talk again next week. All right, sir, that does it for these movies. It was real fun talking about these. Well, where can people actually see your work, sir?
You can find me at theyoungfolks.com. You can find me on Facebook. Look out for my podcast. We'll be recording an episode of my director's podcast discussing Sam Raimi to coincide with Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 3. That'll be up sometime next week. There will also be a Zack Snyder show to coincide with Justice League.
You had to watch all of Zack Snyder's movies again?
I'm still in the process, and I've taken breaks in between.
So you started last week, so I'm guessing you've gone through, what, a movie and a half, maybe?
Well, between that and I revisited a lot of Raimi stuff, so yeah. I'm trying to counteract the two.
And you and I are planning to do one of those.
Yes, we are. We do have a filmmaker that we've thrown up, but I do have a pitch that I want to throw your way sometime soon.
All right. We'll get to that. And also, me and Matt, right before we started recording, we've decided to do a show next week with a guest I'm really excited about. And it's a show that's actually going to be, it's going to be a really, really good show. It's going to be none of the retrospective variety. It's going to be more of a show about what I've been wanting to talk about for quite a while. And it's, I think it's going to be a really, really good one. So be on the lookout for that. That'll be posted next Friday. That's going to be a show of monumental proportions for this particular podcast. I'm really looking forward to it. That does it, sir. Thank you for joining me again. I appreciate you going through the exploits of Chucky with me. Hopefully next week we're going to end this on a positive note. I'm really, really hoping so. But whether it does or doesn't, and here's another thing you and I have spoken about, Matt, off air, is that no matter what we have to say about these movies, it's not that they've been really tough to get through. They're very watchable movies, and it makes for very listenable podcasts, and that it's been fun doing these with you, sir.
Yeah, it has. This has not been a slog by any means.
Thank God I'm not Sita Chucky. I'm very proud of that fact. All right, till next week, I say goodbye. Thanks, Matt.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
How much further till we get to the kid?
A ways.
Step on it!
What's the rush?
If I don't get out of this body soon, I'll be trapped in here! What are you looking at? Don't fuck with the Chuck!
Oh my God.
That is sick. What are you doing with this jerk anyway?
10 years is a long time, Chucky. Besides, I was never actually with you. You know me. I'll kill anybody, but I'll only sleep with someone I love.
How's it hanging, Phil?
Andy, no, please. We're friends to the end, remember?
This is the end, friend.
Sidebar, I went to Universal Studios one time for Halloween Horror Nights, probably about, at this point, I think it's about 5 or 6 years ago. Chucky was actually, he was one of the attractions there, and basically he was up in one of those fake houses at Universal Studios, and all he would do was just look at the audience, and he would just insult the entire audience. And I tell you, man, Mancini has something. If you put this, like, you do it like a, like Jeff Dunham style, and you put him up and you have him up in front of an audience, and he does like stand up like Brad Dourif is holding it Jeff Dunham style. I'm fucking paid to see that.
No, I would watch
I'd go
that.
To that show.
I'd be funnier than this movie.
Damn right.
What the hell?
Tilly says, it's funny, every time it says Tilly here, my iPod put it as Tolly. I'm just known, like, every single time it's up there. I don't have Tilly down, like, as a right spelling this entire fucking note, set of notes.
What the hell?
Redman goes to Jennifer's for dinner. God, why did I have that he was off? What the fuck was I thinking with that note? Okay.
Well, maybe Redman, you were thinking that Chucky got off, and that's what you meant.
Maybe that was it. Redman goes to
What the hell?
That shit got
How much? How many times have we seen The Shining fucking be referenced? And this is stupid.
That joke's been milked so much, if it was a cow, its tits would have fallen off.
Yep. Wow, nice line. I like that line. Chucky.
What the hell?
We're gonna go ahead and get into the movie. We meet Nika, played by Brad Dourif's daughter Fiona, and a box in the shape of Chucky comes to the door.
Well, the box is the shape of a box. You can't really shape a box like a doll.
Okay, all right. Good point. Let me rephrase.
Although I would love to see that. You got a box that's shaped like a doll. You're like, I'm not fucking opening that. You kidding me?
All right, blooper. That's a blooper. Let me restart this. We meet Nika, played by Brad Dourif's daughter Fiona, and a box. What the fuck am I going to say? Box. Ah, fuck. Best blooper ever.
What the hell?
Blaring.
Oh, this is a house that Tim Burton would look at and be like, oh God, tone it down. Like, it's so overdone.
I don't think Tim Burton's ever said, tone it down. Did you see Batman?
Yeah, and I don't really care for either of those movies.
We meet the rest of the family who we will be spending this film with, as we see the maid, who's, by the way, hot as hell.
I thought she was the lost sister of Amanda Seyfried.
Don't say that. Now she's unattractive to me.
You don't find Amanda Seyfried attractive? I mean, I get the big eyes is kind of a turnoff, but...
Maybe in the right light, but you can't always depend on that light, Matt. if this maid is out there, please call me. I find her just to be unbelievably attractive.
With all the shit that's been going on in Hollywood nowadays, you want to throw that out there?
Not really. You're right.
What the hell?
You've been listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on BingeMedia.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Buy some merch at BingeMedia.net/shop. Subscribe to our newsletter at BingeMedia.net/newsletter. And don't forget,
I can't get enough of Super
Bobo Girl.